This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Tim Field tries to curl one and does, and Robert Snodgrass has won it in the last minute, surely for Aston Villa, and their brilliant run is set to continue.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and here we are on transfer deadline day, and joining me with a dildo in each ear, it's Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground.
Listen, it's transfer deadline day, two Samba Mambas, whip them out.
And if you have no idea what we're talking about,
check out the merchandise.
There's the legendary occurrence on transfer deadline day. Was it Sky News? Yes. Was it Norwich?
Roving reporters.
Oh no, it was a roving reporter where they got kind of slapped about with a is it big blue dildo? I can't remember the colour.
Don't think the colour mattered. The fact was it was waved in and around his mouth.
Anyway, so it's transfer deadline day. I think it's come to an end. What time was the deadline? We are approaching midnight. We've just gone past 11:30. We're not here for it. This is not live anyway. So we have actually got to rush the show out because young Mr. Rogers is getting up early to catch a flight to Belfast. Is that right? Am I correct in that?
You're correct, yep. Off to Belfast tomorrow.
What for heaven's sake?
Business and pleasure. Couple of meetings for my startup, and then a bit of R&R in Belfast Friday and back to
Have you been
Saturday.
Before?
Do you know what? It's almost 10 years since I've been to Belfast, so I'm looking forward to going back and having a...
Yeah, I went to some football conference there a couple of years ago, and for the first time, it was great. Actually, we went around all the Northern Ireland clubs' grounds, both sides of the political divide. Also, went to like some of the supporter club bars, and you know they gave us good hospitality. You know, bars that had been bombed out back in the day. But no, it was a fascinating trip, and you know, Belfast, I think it's a great place, a fascinating place to visit if you get the chance. Right, on to the show. We've got like probably less than half an hour. We're going to have to call time at midnight. Dan will turn into a pumpkin. I'll turn into one of the ugly sisters. That'll be the end of the show. So if we suddenly rush off into the night, you know what's happening. If you're new to the show, this won't be a normal show, which normally has all like, you know, cavalcade of laughs and various sketches. It'll be just straight up and out. So apologies if you were looking for more of an hour fix. This will probably be half of that.
This is your gateway drug into future listening.
Blame Villa getting knocked out of the FA Cup, because we would have done a show After the weekend, instead, we had the weekend free, and then we obviously had to wait for the Sheffield United game. Anyway, coming up in the show, a quick 3 points, as usual. Then we'll go straight into what we feel, and I think a lot of villains are starting to feel, is kind of a defining win against Sheffield United in terms of our credentials. And speaking of deadline day, we'll also look at the movements over the past few days that has seen Lewis Graban join from Bournemouth after being ripped away from Sunderland. Also, the outs in terms of Elphick going to Reading, Solomon went to Grimsby, and Tish Bowler, we jettisoned him north of the border back to the only man who believes in him, Steve Clark.
Yes.
And I think his surrogate father.
Yeah,
and
also
the main man that's come from Manchester United, Axel. Do you want to pronounce it?
Tuenzebi.
And we discuss, well, basically, what's the point of him coming?
Ooh,
right, 3 points. First one, Villa Park has finally been ordained or granted the status of asset of community value. This is something that I, when I was at the Aston Villa Supporters Trust, I insisted on getting done. This is when Randy Lerner was the boss, so once you get this, it's going to take 8 weeks, this process. The council's going to take 8 weeks.
Local bureaucracy.
Yeah, local bureaucracy that took like 2 years for an eight-week process.
That's shocking.
This is Birmingham City Council at its finest, if you don't live here and you're unfamiliar with their capacity to drag their feet on things. But, we can go into this maybe next week. But essentially it means that if Aston Villa were up for sale, say for example we didn't get promoted, we tried to get up next season, that failed, and then Dr. Tony said F this for a bag of soldiers and put the club up for sale secretly, we would actually be told that it was up for sale, and we would have 6 weeks to decide whether the fans wanted to buy it or put some consortium together to do that, and then if you wanted to do that, we would then have like 6 months to raise the cash.
I mean, at the very least, my only comment on it would be that it would give you the heads up if something were afoot.
Exactly. I mean, that was the reason why the upshot is it's more of a symbolic gesture that, you know, the most concurrent things about any football club are its supporters, and also its stadium. So at least it links a bit of protection of the stadium via the supporters. Mm. Moving on, number two, a couple of things about transfer deadline day. When Aston Villa were getting in, to Nzebi to announce him, they said, oh, retweet for a signing. They're so desperate to try to get followers. What do they call that? It's kind of
whoring yourself? No.
Yeah, there's a term for it that the millennials use. Which I can't remember what it is. It's, you know, is it beg? It's begging or something, I don't know. So anyway, so in a response, basically as a homage to that, I said retweet to sell Mika Richards. I don't know, about 100 retweets. I think they got 700 or something. Well, when I saw, and I've got like at the time of recording this podcast, 674. So I was hoping that Wyness would get off his Alexa and do something with Richards. But of course, he's never going to go anywhere, Richards. He's just going to see out his contracts while sipping on a big cocktail.
Sipping what, sorry? A big?
Big tail.
Right, yes.
You're disgusting. Also, as well as the ins and outs, news has leaked out that Alan Hutton will be discarded at the end of his contract, at the end of the season, which I think he's like 33 anyway, and I'm sorry, but he just, good effort, blah, 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 good comeback, but he, to me, he's the kind of player that symbolises the mediocrity that Villa have found themselves suffocating under.
Yeah, time to move on. Time to move on.
Yeah. What was your overall appraisal of transfer deadline day?
Well, my appraisal of transfer deadline day is it sort of sets the tone. The whole transfer window thing is fueled now by the clickbait merry-go-round of non-news, or fake news, I suppose, as Trump would term it. And I think it's, if you could strip that away and say, well, what did we actually need at the beginning of the transfer window? Not a lot.
No.
And I think that we've added, obviously, the loanee from Man United. And if anything, that's forced our hand on a couple of other players, clearly gone and knocked on Bruce's door to say, you know, if I'm not going to be getting game time or I'm a bit further down the pecking order, adios. in the case of Elphick. Yeah.
Or, I mean, maybe Elphick wanted out. I mean, we discussed this earlier on a previous show, that I thought it was odd that he didn't play against Peterborough in the FA Cup, because Terry needed nursing in, and a proper centre-back next to him. So maybe, and obviously Elphick needed more games. So maybe he said, right, Terry's coming back, I'm off ski.
I don't blame Elphick, really. It's a funny one, yeah, because he struggled when he first came to the club, but his performances while he was deputising made you think, do you know what, he's got to be ahead of Samba, but ahead of Samba isn't ahead of Terry or Chester, is it? And at the stage of his career, it's fair.
Yeah, I had him down as the number one backup to either Chester or Terry dropping out, and you felt comfortable with him based on... Because he was, he was part of the turnaround from that December slump. Mm-hmm. He came in after Bruce had tried every combination that wasn't Tommy Elphick.
Yes.
From Samba to Jedinak trying to play the position until the glaringly obvious, just give him a go. And, he was top man.
He also shoehorned Bree in at centre-half against Peterborough. Again, we spoke about it last time. But
yeah.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because I think a couple of months ago you'd have probably gone, that's a logical move and no great loss. But like you say, that he'd sort of played himself back into contention where it was reassuring to have him
Bjarnason, I mean, we'll talk about Bjarnason in a minute, but, he looked like he was on his way out and, nobody would have batted an eyelid. I think it's probably more Tommy Elphick saying, look, I need to play regular football. I'm, 30 years old. I think this is the window for me.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone would hold that against him. I think it's, like you say, at that stage of his career, he's going to want to be playing. And this is, and also, the reality is if we get ourselves out of the decision, probably it's facilitating himself and another move and a final contract, isn't it?
The third and final point, and we'll just quickly brush on this. Mr. Ozil. Arsenal gives him a new contract. Is it three and a half years, whatever it is? Mm. Paying him £350,000 a week. Now, I haven't been following the Premier League, but so the only thing that kind of filters into me is when some player's setting the world on fire, because you always see it on Twitter.
It's a lot of
money. So, I mean, excuse my ignorance, but I don't, no player deserves that amount of money anyway.
I think it sits alongside other baffling things, like Leicester turning down bids of $50 million plus for Mahrez, and
they're justified in the context of who else is going for more.
But it's kind of like, that $350,000. That's almost half of the retainer you pay me for this show, And I think that that would just be like me arriving week on week saying, well, I want $10,000 more because such and such has it. And that's how transfer fees have got, isn't it? And it's the same with wages now.
If only football podcasts were in line with the amount of money that footballers get paid. I mean, come on, we're funnier, we're more intelligent.
Mm. Yeah, that's a given.
So we surely should be paid more. Well, we don't actually get paid, but we should get paid more than players if we got paid. It's a disgrace. I remember the question from the last show about why women's football. Well, in terms of wages, when they started the Premier League, they should have looked at what's happened in America, and they should have done this kind of capping, squad capping, wage capping, so it would always be kind of controlled, but most of all would make it fair across the division. So you would have a wage cap that every team had, and so they were pretty much on an equal footing. And so the science of football, who's got the best tactics and manager, etc., and who's a bit foxy in the transfer market would be rewarded, rather than just, some country buying a club like Qatar and then just slapping down five oceans of oil's worth of money on players. But anyway, sorry, going back to the women's football. So here's an idea. The women kick up, demand equal pay. And to facilitate this equal pay, they have to chop the men's money right down and drag it all the way back. And, they can bring up the women's a little bit. And then they meet at a low number to provide equal pay.
Well, at a fair number. I think it opens up lots of debates across.
Equality wins.
Well, I think sanity wins.
Wins.
I mean, 350. Just take it. I mean, there's other higher paid players, and I'm thinking of the Sanchez move to Man United as well. I think he's on a significant amount more than that. Even you just think it underlines perhaps one of. I think it can make you sound like an old timer who's heads of touch, but it's not normal, and I think that when, you know, it was not so long ago that players, you know, even winding back the clock to, you know, the Gregory era, they were well paid, you know, individuals who became millionaires. But we're talking about, you know, Ozil's earning, you know, over £500,000 a fortnight for, and I consider him to be a good player, but one of the Arsenal greats? Nah, not for me.
Yeah.
And that's, it's that fairness, and I think as well against a backdrop of a society of growing poverty, growing, you know, disproportionate wealth. It's not good, actually.
A fan contacted me who just won a signed Aston Villa shirt, and he sent me a message saying, would you be able to organise an auction? And he named a couple of homeless charities. Mm. And I said, yeah, certainly, not a problem. So there's this kind of duality of football where the fans are like trying to actually do something for the society that they see around them, which is like you can't go and walk the dog or go for a coffee without seeing homeless people, pretty much guaranteed in almost every city or village, town in this country.
It's a very visible problem in Birmingham particularly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, more so than, you know, let's say 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you've got these players who... they're not gods, or they're not actually the best players of the team, and these teams would function without them.
Mm.
Getting paid, you know, over $250,000, well, and some, a week, it's. I mean, it says more about what's going wrong with society. I mean, we could riff on that for ages, but let's go back into the world of Aston Villa. And fifth win on the trot, first time since 1998 under John Gregory, when we were only Muzzy Is It away from winning the league.
Ah, we lie awake at night dreaming.
I'm just glad that this is the second time in you know, almost 50 podcasts that we've managed to get Muzzy Is It's name in.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but that's got to, you know, that's got to get some sort of stat that we can definitely riff on that.
So the first time to win five, and I wrote an article a week ago basically saying his three pivotal games for the rest of the season, which will give you a real indication of if we are automatic promotion material or not. First one was Sheffield United, and that one's been dispatched in the last minute. Next one comes after the next two games. The next two home games is the away trip to Fulham, and Fulham...
Yeah, they're going.
We were 100% in January, but there was one team above us in the current form, well, the January form, and it was on goal difference, obviously, because it was played 4-1-4, and that was Fulham, who have been blitzing their way up and will probably make a late charge for it in terms of at least the playoffs. And then I think it's the Derby grudge match at Villa Park. I think those, if we won all those three, I would pretty much say that we will be automatic promotion. I mean, obviously you've got to do well in the rest of the games, but you know what I'm talking about.
I think the fact that we're on a five game winning streak for the first time since 98, I mean, that's almost 20 years ago. I think it's April this year that the anniversary was for. That is a long time in any measure, and I think that it shows how far we've come. I think, you know, we're getting into the nitty gritty of the Sheffield United game. Obviously the manner of that win is massive.
It was very much in the fashion of the Middlesbrough game, where you go to the promotion rival's own patch and you know, do a job on them, and it doesn't really matter about the performance. It's all about running away with the 3 points. What stood out for you in that game? I think there's three obvious players, but I'll see if you can guess.
I thought Sam Johnston was excellent. He is turning into a top goalkeeper, isn't he? I mean, I'm looking here. What's that? Most clean sheets, 21. I mean, that's fantastic. Just a ridiculous statistic in itself.
Yeah. Next up is Scott Carson, ex of Villa, on 18 clean sheets.
But, you know, who has vast amounts of experience as well.
Yeah. As I mean, as well as Johnston's saves, and I think there was, let's say, two or three kind of pivotal saves there. I mean, he's just a steady presence, full stop.
He's steady, his handling's excellent, and this is a repeat on things that we've been saying since most of this season, really, as he's really come on, is that it's the first time in years that we've had a, you know, use the word steady, but he's a reassuring presence for the defence, because we've looked so shaky that, you know, we've always had defenders almost looking over their shoulders thinking, oh, bloody hell, Guzan's in goal, what are we going to do? I mean, moving on, I think that Bjarnason, you've already mentioned, he's like reborn, isn't he? His performance was outrageous against Sheffield United. I think it was 100% tackle completion. You know, that's ridiculous.
He was tackling back, he was blocking. I mean, brilliant. He was doing all the defensive stuff, like, as good as you can get for a defensive midfielder. And then when he's threading the ball off and playing it forward with much more conviction than, you know, I don't want to name names, but anybody else who's played in that position, he was looking to get things forward. He was feeding Grealish quickly to get it to his feet so he could spur Villa on over the halfway line quickly. And he was also joining the attacks as well.
Well, that's a good point.
You know,
really.
the other DMs have tended to sit back and kind of snuggle the halfway line when Villa are attacking. But Bjarnason, you know, he got a shot in, I think it was the first half, but he was right up there. And obviously, when he got switched, when Jedinak came on, you know, he's the guy who, in the dying minutes, lays off Snodgrass to, you know, put it away.
Yeah, so I was just about to say that. I think.
But he looks classy.
He suddenly. Is it a confidence thing? Is it kind of like the Hogan uplift that we've seen? That did he? Is he one of these players who, and this is not an excuse I normally buy, actually, that they need game time in order that they can get sharper. But it does seem to ring true, because game on game.
He didn't really have a position, did he?
Correct. And you know, I won't lie, you know, it's documented here and elsewhere. I was really worried that I hadn't seen much of a footballer in him, but and it.
Now you hate him still, don't you? Hate him?
Not at all. Well, I was always baffled and by the fact that the Icelandic performances that we'd seen it was like a different player. And now I think that, you know, you use the word classic. His work rate against Sheffield United was fantastic. And I think that, you know, you always keep an eye on social media during the games. And I think that the narrative that some people can see of not just Bjarnason, but of the team over that game, you know, and obviously the outcome was it was a late winner that we scored and everyone feels completely different in an instant. But I thought that Bjarnason underlined, actually, it was a dogged performance. And I think if we'd have gone away with a point, you know, I thought that was a hard-earned point. The fact that we went away with a win is because we were protected so well by players like
Bjarnason. If you look at Grealish was also a very willing runner, and he got kind of stuck in and a bit different, because sometimes, you know, he's been guilty of, let's say, walking back when in defence. But, you know, you saw against Barnsley, he had mud on his shorts, as a few people commented.
He was tireless again.
And he kept going and kept going and kept going. I mean, obviously his conditioning coach has got the plaudits recently. Is it Ollie Stevenson? And there may be some real truth in that, because the only person that went missing was Conor Hourihan, and typical, you know, some Villa fans already signalling him out, because they always have to hate one player at least who's in the first 11, and I think they're barking up the wrong tree there, because
I think he's a quality
You're talking about a player who scored a hat trick, for God's sake, from midfield.
I think it can be, we're into Tom Fox territory when I say the word, but it's the false narrative. And Bruce did his job on the night, because he identified it wasn't working for Hourihan at that time. The switch that he made in bringing on Jedinak, it made us solid. It released Bjarnason to a different role, but it also brought on Josh Onuma, who, again, he's had his criticism, and I hastily remind people he's a young kid, but he immediately injected pace. He's another one who's very direct. It doesn't always come off, but there was a couple of times he picked up the ball, looked up, and the Sheffield United defence realised that they had a kid who was running at them. That's a terrifying thing for defences. And it turned the game in our favour. Hourihan wasn't having the impact on the game. The changes that Bruce made shored us up at the back with Jedinak being dropped in there, but also it allowed us to have that chance in the dying stages, you know, the classy layoff from Bjarnason. And
literally a minute before, when Davis came on, he was down the left wing,
and
he
held up,
he got the ball and like taking on players and, you know, taking the game to them. It was suddenly the ball was sticking and we kept it up there. And that was, you know, part and parcel of how we ended up winning the game in the end. I mean, as I mentioned in the last show, I think it should be a regular segment now, I think, the Scott Hogan touches update.
Sounds like some sort of predatory Crime Watch type thing. Oh, how many times has he touched?
Maybe it deserves... let's not go too sordid with it. Maybe it deserves its own jingle and theme tune or something.
I've already done you a rap. You never play the rap.
It was at the end of the show.
No, but you need to play more, is what I say. It's just not going to get appreciated there. You can insert it here.
Scott Hogan. Scott Hogan. Scott Hogan.
Scott Hogan, motherfucker!
And there
it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But anyway, so against Sheffield United, Scott Hogan actually had 13 touches during the whole game. That's ironically one more than he managed against Barnsley, where he had 12 touches but managed to score two of them. So did he improve on his Barnsley performance or not? It's Scott, with Scott Hogan, the stats do not mean anything.
No, I was about to say, good luck plotting that onto a graph and trying to interpret it.
I think one of his issues, it wasn't so much what he was doing, it was Sheffield United. When they defended, they got back very quickly in numbers, and that frustrated not only Hogan, but also Grealish wasn't able to pin-eye any passes through there to him. And, perhaps it also frustrated Hourihane as well. I mean, I think he had a shot or two blocked as well. And, Snodgrass, I mean, he whipped in a couple of deliveries, but I think he was, he was just having a frustrated game until he's obviously his winner, chicken dinner went in, and then suddenly, in the eyes of Sky, he's the man of the match, which really wasn't really the narrative. It was just so simple. I was looking at some stats, like an Opta stats page, and he was on like 7 out of 10 for the game with like 5 minutes to go. Everybody else, like 7.5, 7.6, whatever. Goal goes in, suddenly 8 10. Point whatever, man of the match. It's like, oh, I see how these guys work it. They don't really watch the game and make a judgment on the actual game. It's just some geek watching it on the screen, giving them points. Oh, here's a point for a pass. Oh, 2 points for an assist. Oh, 5 points for a goal. And it's all, it's almost like statistically done rather than with any, feeling looking at their contribution to the game at large.
I mean, so it depends how you class contribution, I suppose. I mean, I describe it pretty similarly to you, I guess, that I thought his performance, Snodgrass's performance, was industrious, but frustrated, I think, by Sheffield United's doggedness at the back. But if you're judging him on having that telling moment of quality to win the games, which I have to admit, I'm impressed with him at this level, and I've said before that I wonder whether you make the step up to the Premier League. That's where he struggled. But it was an outstanding goal to win the game with, and
as we've previously said, his industry hasn't you can't question it, but what we've seen when he played for Leeds and Norwich, he had the end product, which he hasn't really been delivering. He had the Hollywood goals, is what I'm saying. Yeah. And that was really one of the first times we've seen one of these Hollywood goals. I mean, he's been chipping in and being either the assist maker or the scorer in the last few games. But this was like what we thought we were getting when we got him in. Because I'm sure we're paying him Premier League wages. We're not doing we're not doing it on the cheap. So that was more. And I think I said, I think he'll only get better in terms of that end product, and he will score more goals. And it was a good timing because it was, as I said, a pivotal game that really defined what this season could be about. Now I've got a question for you, which is obviously a bit of a Brucey dilemma now. With Bjarnason looking the real deal as a defensive midfielder, sitting on the bench was Jedinak, Glenn Whelan, and Axel Rose from Manchester United. all of them getting paid good money. Well, probably Axel's not on what the other two are. But What does Bruce do? I mean, with the new guy, for example, for starters, because, I mean, you can understand Jedinak will get time because if the team were playing a chase in the game and, like, you know, trying to bombard it into the box, then obviously Jedinak adds a bit of height to deal with that. So you can see him coming on, whether it's for Bjarnason or somebody else. Whelan, I think he's got problems getting back in the team. But Axel, what is the point? What's the point? We're calling him Axel because it's easier to say than his surname.
I think it's a good problem to have. I suppose what you're alluding to is that why was he bought? What was the purpose? And I think with the, you know, it's sort of like the status quo, isn't it, with the players that have gone out already. And the only thing I do know about him, and it is, I can only say through a bit of frantic Googling about him when he joined, is that he's supposed to be quite versatile. So across the back line and across the whole of the midfield.
But why would United and why would he come to Villa if he's not actually going to play?
Well, that's the biggie, yeah.
And Bruce, you know, Bruce said, yeah, he will be involved against Sheffield United. And then he's, you know, Bruce is standing there and looking at Bjarnason and going, well, you know, I can't take him off. It's I'll be laughed at or, you know, ridiculed.
Well, I think there's a long season still ahead of us, and I think that's probably the rationale that we've got quite a strong squad with reasonable depth, and I think it's kind of countering the problems that he knew he had coming down the line. So he's probably well aware that Elphick was going to move on. I think what it does is it's obviously forced the issue with Suleiman, who's gone off to Grimsby. So it's the debate, isn't it, or the discussion that, hang on, are we developing another team's player? Well, yes, we are. The awkward conversation is as well that Manchester United would probably take the view that Axel Rose is better than Suleiman, and we would obviously be wanting to develop our own under 21 defender ourselves. So it's a tricky one.
Yeah, that conversation only comes in when you're looking at a player who if there's an injury crisis might get in. I think we'll get a go, but I we're going to have to assume that with Elphick gone now, that he would play centre back, for example, if one of the centre backs got injured, and Bruce is kind of reassured that he'll do a decent job because the guy, the guy could be, very talented, and I don't think he's no slouch, but he's never been in the Championship before, and he's 20 years old, and he might not have the temperament for it, and it's not a very good time for Villa to find out whether he can handle it or not in the middle of the running to try to, get promoted.
Well, no, it comes with risk, definitely, and I suppose what we're having to do is hopefully we've done our homework, and I was about to say I'm sure we have, but we haven't in the past. But, if he's anything like the quality that Johnston's turned out to be. And, the other final thing is, it's a bit of faith and a bit of trust, I suppose, is that you're not going to get to 20 years old at Manchester United, having come through and be the England under 21 captain and be poor. But there is risk attached to it. I agree that if we got down to the bare bones and we're having to, rely upon him for a number of games, that's untested. But, we've got strength in depth there, and actually players that can interchange. So, you just said that you don't think Whelan's getting back in the team. Injuries will come along, suspensions will come along, and though he's made some mistakes that have cost us, I do think there's a time and a place for a Whelan where you need someone in there harrying and doing the ugly things.
But I suppose he could also fit in alongside Bjarnason as well, and then if you're a goal up or you're 2-0 up or you're actually chasing or you're getting overrun, then suddenly to have that kind of energy and double dynamo, because obviously Bjarnason's there, here, there and everywhere and runs for the whole game. And if Axel does that as well, which I'm assuming he does, then that could bring a different level and dimension to the midfield. For example, if Hourihane's having a quiet game as he did against Sheffield United, you can bring him up to kind of beef things up a little bit.
And I think just one final point on this is, I was considering it when Jedinak did jog onto the pitch the other day, that he hasn't been able to do that so regularly, really. I think it was at one point he had less game time than Gabby this season. So I think we have to plan for the reality that, given his age and his apparent eagerness to continue playing international football, which his attendance at is flawless by comparison to his club appearances. Not that I'm insinuating anything at all of Football Australia, but it's that's the reality. And I think that's where I think the injection of having an up and coming rising talent from United's ranks makes a bit more sense.
And just another note, we haven't got long left. Lewis Graban, I think that's kind of a insurance policy, really, isn't it?
Yep.
Because it sounded like Bruce, if he couldn't get a man in, and obviously his main target was Leandro Joa from Leicester, who obviously ended up in Brighton. And I think he publicly said that if he couldn't get another striker that I actually wanted in, then they'd be fine and they'd have to like tough it out. There was, I think, you know, there was enough there as long as Hogan didn't break down for the rest of the season to get us over the line. But I think the main thing that's impressed him about Mr. Lewis Graban is his goals for Sunderland, in you know, obviously scraping the bottom of the league for most of the season.
Yeah, his conversion rate's very high, isn't it?
Before that, I mean, he scored 22 for Bournemouth 2013-14 season. He's played a few games for Norwich and Bournemouth in the Premier League, but he's scored one goal in the Premier League and just hasn't really cut it at that level. But in the Championship, he's, you know, as he's proven, he scored 22 goals one season and he scored 12 goals before Christmas. So this season, so I think that's enough to have him in there as a, you know, one of four.
I agree. I think it gives us a bit more cover. I think it takes away that reliance upon and the pressure on Davis.
He was a handful when we played Sunderland. I mean, he obviously scored against us.
I think it's a clever signing. It's the interesting thing about it. I wonder what the driver for this was, because, you know, you've seen Hogan's emergence on the scene. It was prior to that happening that there were some rumours about Graban being available. But the reports I remember reading were that Bournemouth were only looking to sell, and I wonder whether the player and his representatives are perhaps looking at the Sunderland situation and saying, you know, come on, we, you know, don't try and force a permanent deal. Just get me out of the stadium alight.
But there has been a period where he has obviously been back at Bournemouth, so it's interesting that it wasn't like he goes back and it's an instant switch. So obviously maybe he had a few options that he had to mull over. But it's kind of a strange one for him, because he's 30 years old. Obviously, you know, it's perfect for Villa. They don't give a shit past this season, because I don't think, you know, if they get promoted, as we've just discussed, he's not a Premier League level striker, or he hasn't proved it up until this date. Very much like Ross McCormack, actually. He never played in the Premier League, so at least Lewis has got one over McCormack in that respect.
I mean, just to finish off on Graban as well, there's, just to underline what you were just saying, that he's, you know, we've got 6 months, and it's 1,000 times better than waking up to discover that we've signed Grant Holt for a few weeks. It's just all round better, isn't it?
Have a point there. Was that Martin O'Neill signed Grant Holt?
I think it was a Paul Lambert signing, you know.
Oh, sorry, yeah, Paul Lambert. Martin O'Neill era was the last, you know, that was when Grant was in his 30s. I think when Lambert signed him, he was in his 50s, wasn't he?
No, Martin O'Neill was the player who said, oh, hang on, we're not going to sign Darren Bent for £10 million. We'll get Marlon Harewood instead, and then we'll buy Bent when he's £24 million under Julio.
So, I mean, in terms of just to conclude on the transfer window, I think we got everything sorted. We need a new striker to cover Codger. We've got that in, and somebody who has a proven record in this season's Championship. So, you know, that's a tick. Axel gives you coverage over several positions, and since we've had two out, even at the base level of him, he is just replacing Elphick and Richie Dillat, then, you know, that's all good. So
finally a window,
all good.
Massive churn. It's been a while.
After that Sheffield United win, we have now got the luxury of two home games against Burton, followed by the Blues. I mean, the Blues have the worst away record in the league, so
home win.
It's a great leveller, blah, 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 derbies, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, you've got to go into that game winning, even though they've had a resurgence of form recently. Although,
so have we.
One of their two wins in the month of January was obviously against Sunderland, who were a bit of a hopeless cause. Villa, after those two games, have got to play Fulham away. That's another one of the tough tests, because are top of the January form league, above Villa on goal difference. Both teams 1-4 out of 4. So the team that we're chasing, Derby, 1 point ahead, have now got three home games on the trot. But I wouldn't say they're necessarily going to win all those three, because they're playing Brentford, Norwich. Norwich are also on a bit of form at the moment.
Brentford are a decent team.
And Leeds as well, who you know, can occasionally turn up, even though they're spluttering if they're really going to consider themselves of having any chance of the playoffs this season. But you know, I don't think they'll win all those three. If they win all those three, then it's we're going to have to put really pull up socks up to dispose them. But you know, they've dropped points now. We were 5 points behind them. Now it's only the single point, so
we're right on them.
Looking good. Right, I think it's time to get out. We've gone past well past midnight, so we're just going to cut this one short, but we'll have a proper show après the Burton game. Please do subscribe on iTunes, or we're on Deezer now. If you listen to your music on Deezer, you can find us there. Just go to myomansaid.co.uk and there's a link on the side that will take you there, because I can't remember the actual address to go to Deezer. Actually, you can just search on Deezer. It will appear. Do follow us on Twitter as well at Aston Villa Pod, and sending your comments or anything you want to talk about. So until the doubleheader at Villa Park, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said,
away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.